Hello, I'm Martin Rosendale, CEO of the Maryland Technology Council and partner with Newport, and you're listening to Capital M, the podcast addressing capital markets in Maryland and the Mid-Atlantic. The Maryland Technology Council is the industry trade association representing the technology and life science industries throughout Maryland. Together with our members, we are improving the business climate in Maryland and helping companies that save, secure, and improve lives around the globe. The Capital M podcast is intended to further the regional conversation around capital markets, define issues, identify solutions, and build consensus to drive change. My guest today is Pete Buzzi. Pete is the president and CEO of Paragon Bioservices. He's a veteran of the life sciences industry and financial markets. He's also an active board member of the Maryland Technology Council and member of our executive committee. Pete, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you today.
Pete, Paragon's been in the news quite a bit lately. You just held the grand opening of your new manufacturing facilities, which are amazing, by the way. The tour was phenomenal. Then within days of that ceremony, you announced a $1.2 billion acquisition by Catalent. I can't imagine how you managed to keep that quiet during the ceremony for the opening of those facilities. So first of all, congratulations. That's phenomenal news. Paragon's become one of the big success stories in Maryland. Could you take just a minute and tell us a bit about Paragon, its history, and a bit about yourself as well?
Sure. So maybe I'll start just a bit about myself. I'm from Maryland. My roots are here. I actually grew up in the Rockville area. Locally, I've worked in a couple different jobs. Years ago, I was a partner at Ernst & Young, so I kind of have a little different background than maybe a lot of other CEOs. I was working in the life science space, so with a lot of the local tech companies. After that, I spent 13 years at Martech Biosciences as CFO, and also, I was also very operationally oriented. We went through almost hyper growth for a number of years. We grew the company from about 100 employees to over 600 employees. We built out two big manufacturing facilities, one in Kentucky and one in South Carolina. So I was very hands-on during that process. We ultimately sold the company to DSM for $1.1 billion in 2011. I took a little bit of time off, did some consulting, and I got to know Paragon. Mm-hmm. Paragon was founded by Marco Chacon almost 30 years ago. Marco, by himself, grew the company to about a little bit less than $20 million in top-line revenue, a little more than 100 employees, very, very strong scientifically. Marco was going through his first institutional funding back, I think, in 2012, 2013. So I actually helped Marco write a business plan, talk to private equity sponsors. Marco, I had the introduction from Marco from Rick Core with Evergreen Capital, mm-hmm. and I've known Rick. Rick's been part of the ecosystem locally for a number of years. I learned more about the CMO business and what Marco was doing in biologics. The more I learned, the more I liked it. So I actually helped raise money that I invested with the two private equity funds. We raised money with Camden Partners, a local Baltimore fund, and New Spring Capital outside of Philly. So I invested with those two funds. I initially joined as chief operating officer, and then after about 1 year, moved into my current position as CEO with Paragon.
Fantastic. So Martech is also another success story in Maryland. Success seems to be following you around. That's fantastic. I love it. So with the announcement of the acquisition by Catalent, this podcast is intended to address capital markets and help companies understand, young companies understand how to prepare, how to work within the capital markets. What did that transaction look like, and what was your path to get there? How did you get the company to that point?
Again, Paragon 5 years ago was doing a lot of different things. We were doing government contracting work, probably 40 or 45% of the business was government contracting work, and almost any type of business that was coming in the door. So one key thing we did was made an assessment, okay, what do we do best? And really what I say is really came up with a defined commercial strategy. We got out of the government contracting work. We're looking at our skill sets, and we are doing very well in kind of the vaccine space. And from some of the learnings we had from government contracts, we're actually able to solve some issues in what's happening in gene therapy. Mm-hmm. So again, our focus really went from doing 10 different things to doing one or two things. So we've been focused in the gene therapy space and the vaccine space. One other big thing that I did basically was really go out and recruit a rock star senior team. Mm-hmm. So we really selected people from almost all over the country that had done this before. So maybe people that had worked in biotech, pharma, but we very much needed people that worked in the service side of the business. So a CMO business where you're working with, you know, 5 to 10 clients basically, and that's a different skill set than maybe someone would have if they'd spent their whole career with Merck. So we've had that basically. It's worked. We saw some scale-up issues with a couple key clients that are in the Cambridge area. Most of the gene therapy companies, are in the Boston area. Because of that, we fixed some scale-up issues. Word of mouth grew. We've been almost doubling every year for the last couple of years. You know, as of today, we're a little bit more than 400 employees with a strategy to probably be closer to 600 by the end of this calendar year. We have now about 20 clients that are probably out of the top 30 gene therapy companies in the world. 20 clients are with Paragon. And we basically now created a niche for ourselves that we're one of the top two or three CDMOs in the gene therapy space. So, again, it's been working out very, very well. Mm-hmm. And maybe just to fast forward to this transaction, we made a big decision to build out a new facility outside of BWI Airport. A very, very large footprint. I think you were at the grand opening. You know, the base footprint is 150,000. We're putting a second story on part of the building. So we'll have a 200,000 square foot building there. We broke ground at the facility about 18 months ago, and we'll be making our first commercial product soon. I mean, those programs have started. We've almost sold the capacity of the full building out, where we're still 18 months away from completing the construction.
Wow.
And so, again, it's working well. Again, we've created just a great buzz in the industry. We're hiring a ton of new employees. We took a second building. So, we'll have, when we're done, probably over 350,000 square feet of new space in Anne Arundel County. So it's working well. And maybe to fast forward to what happened with Catalent, the gene therapy space is really, has been somewhat new, and it's really coming to fruition over the last, say, two to five years or so. We're one of the leaders in the industry. Some other big CDMOs have some biologic offerings but have not been in the gene therapy space, basically. And so we've become kind of, I think, a very valuable asset, basically. We've outgrown somewhat the lifespan of our current investors. Our current investors are smaller growth equity funds. They've been in the investment now almost 5 years. So it did work out well. And Catalent's a great partner. They're a big company, but they're not a giant company. And right. So they're able to act, I think, pretty darn fast, basically. You know, they're located in New Jersey. Their CEO's on my speed dial already. They have about 12,000 employees. So they'll be able to bring, more resources to the company, assistance in building out capital programs, more capital. Because I think if you look at what we're doing, it's really just going to accelerate. Mm-hmm. So I think with them, as part of Paragon, as part of Catalent, it's going to be more jobs to the state, more expansion. We'll end up spending in the first building near $250 million. And our second building, if things move forward, it'll probably be closer to $300 million. So it's a big, big capital program in the state.
Wow, that's fantastic. So, Pete, you mentioned the leadership team that you put together. And I believe that the leadership team is critical. I've noticed in press releases and in public announcements, you're constantly giving credit to your team, to the staff, which, by the way, I believe is a sign of a really good, strong leader. But the question that I want to ask you is, how important was that leadership team when you were talking with Catalent, when you're talking with strategic partners? How important is that leadership team in their view of you and the company and their desire to do a transaction?
I mean, it was 100% important. I mean, what we've pulled together is a group of leaders, a group, again, people that have done this before. I think we're kind of selling this as a platform to build a much larger organization. Mm-hmm. So we have a very deep leadership team. We had dinner a few weeks back. We had 18 people on our leadership team, which is a mm-hmm. big, big team. And one of the issues when I took the job of talking with New Spring Capital and Camden Partners was that I needed the flexibility to go get the best people I could. And part of this, my background is in finance, is not in biotech. And so I can't 100% can't do it by myself at all. Right. So I really need to be able to go out and kind of surround myself again with the right individuals. And it's been working well.
That's fantastic. By the way, another sign of a really good, strong leader is self-awareness. And I think you've demonstrated that in the people that you've brought in and frankly, the team that you've put together. So you mentioned that your path to becoming a successful CEO has been focused on the financial side of business. What advice can you provide the Tech Council members as far as preparing for the capital markets? And in your mind, what does it mean to be capital markets ready?
Okay. It's a few things. I think first, companies really need to know either – I'd call it either their value proposition or their distinctive competence. Okay. Mm-hmm. Why is someone going to invest into whatever model you have, whatever business you have? Mm-hmm. I think that's incredibly important. I think that message needs to be very clear. And also it needs to be very clear to be ready. I think you need to understand kind of, you know, who your customer is if you're looking at financing sources. You know, how are they going to get their money back, basically? Those are critical items. I think then a few other things. I think, you know, companies need to be very clear in the messaging. I think sometimes technology companies, you know, unless someone can get it on a napkin as far mm-hmm. as what the value proposition is, you know, how are you going to go to market, make money, return investment to whichever investor you're looking at, you know, otherwise people are going to get lost in the details. So, again, right. The message has to be very, very clear.
So for the CEOs listening to this podcast, how much of your time has been spent on capital issues and capital markets and strategic partnerships and things of that nature versus how much of your time has been spent in the office working with the leadership team running the day-to-day of the company?
You know, the capital markets piece, it's probably, you know, 25% of my time. I'd say a lot of the time that I'm outward focusing either with our existing investors, say new partnerships. We did a lot of the funding for the new build out with customers. So mm-hmm. a lot of time explaining that. And I think one thing I'm very proud of the team, you know, we've announced one big deal with Sarepta, a big successful right. gene therapy company in Boston. When we cut that deal with them, we had an empty building, right? And, mm-hmm. and Paragon had never been into phase three commercial manufacturing. And the only reason we got them comfortable was really the team members have done this before. Mm-hmm. And we've been delivering very, very well. You know, the build out for their dedicated suites is coming, you know, online later this year. So we've delivered very well.
Okay, great. So I hear a lot from our members and, frankly, virtually everybody in the Mid-Atlantic about the difficulty raising capital in the Mid-Atlantic. However, some companies like yourself have been very successful doing it. What are the important leadership traits that are necessary to be successful raising capital? Secondly, is this a problem that's unique just to this region? And when you are raising capital, I noticed that you said you raised some of that capital from local investors. How far outside the region did you have to go to bring in the capital that you needed?
I guess the answer, I think, you know, for the right business model, I think capital is always available. I think there's a lot of capital out there. It may not be sitting here in the Mid-Atlantic, but it's available. And I think part of this, to get ready, to have access, a lot of it comes back to, let's say, the dynamics of the team. I think mm-hmm. the team's always going to have some pluses and minuses. I think it's critical for management teams to understand that, and if they need to backfill a certain position to do that before going out to raise capital. One of the big benefits, I think, of what we've done a little bit, I'd say, is my history in that, you know, I've got some gray hair now, and I've kind of done this before. But I think having, you know, an industry veteran on the team is very, very beneficial. And I think, you know, locally you do have, you know, some HGS executives that are out there, some MedImmune executives that are out there doing this again. But I think executives like that on a team mm-hmm. would be critical. They're going to add availability to that.
So in addition to your team, as you were working through the transaction, looking for strategic partners, as you were raising capital, did you use outside resources? Did you use investment banks, investor relations firms, law firms? And if you did, what did that look like? How did you utilize them, and how did you make them the most successful for you?
One of the benefits of kind of the Paragon story is we've had, you know, two very good equity partners. So we had New Spring Capital and Camden Partners to mm-hmm. kind of help do this. And this is the first time I've worked in a private equity model. I think we've always been able to kind of leverage their network. And one of them is local, one of them is at least in the Mid-Atlantic. So they've been very helpful in connection with, you know, both bankers, law firms. We did pick a banker early on, you know, probably 12 months before we were thinking about doing something. And I think the benefit of that, it kind of gets you, you know, say, plugged into exactly what's happening in the marketplace. So you're able to leverage their learnings to understand, again, how you fit into, you know, let's say the broader, you know, M&A profile that's out there. So that was very helpful. And I also think that especially for early stage technology companies, you can't skimp kind of on, let's say, with outside law firms. Intellectual property, you better make sure you've got that rock solid, right? Because if you don't day one, you know, that could present a big, big problem going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a balance because a lot of early stage companies may not have the funding. But I think the larger law firms, accounting firms, and others do bring a lot of value, and it really puts you at a position that, you know, you're dealing with your peers. You're looking at maybe like a bigger company, but I think it's important to make that investment early on.
So I'm hearing a number of trends in the financial markets today that I'd like to get your insight about. So first of all, I'm hearing that there's a lot of capital available. From sources like PitchBook and others, they are saying that private equity firms have a lot of capital. They're looking for ways to place it. I also hear that from my partners at Newport, by the way. I'm also hearing that investments today tend to be larger and fewer, and that the investors are holding back capital because they know they're going to have to invest more in a future round. Are you seeing these same kinds of trends that are being reported in the media?
I am. I'm fairly close to both Newspring and Camden, and I think what they're saying, and they're growth company investors, so they don't take technology risks, but they are saying that it's getting more and more competitive out there to find, you know, say, good deals, basically. Mm-hmm. And I do think that there still is a gap for early stage companies. Mm-hmm. And there, I think CEOs need to be scrappy. Right. And there's other ways, I'd say, to validate technology. And one way maybe is to, you know, there's some industries that can access government money. And a lot of times that, you know, may not be big dollars, but I think it may validate the technology. And mm-hmm. MarTech did that years ago. There's other ways, let's say, the local ecosystem, let's say, to be involved in incubator program. You know, that's a positive because it does mean that, you know, someone has vetted, you know, the early stage business plan or whatever to at least get you in there. And so I do think there are, let's say, tools available through the local ecosystem to help early stage companies probably, you know, maybe look a little bit bigger than they are.
Right.
And to validate either the technology or the business model.
Pete, we did another podcast and Tony Cord from the Newport Group was on, and he talked a lot about needing to de-risk the company. And it sounds to me that when you talk about validation, when you talk about support from incubators, sounds to me like you're talking about the same thing.
Very much so. And that's maybe one other way to de-risk this. If you can get a big customer, let's say, to sign up as a pilot program, right, then you're validating technology.
Right.
Right. And I think that's probably what Tony was mentioning. If you can get anything that, let's say, de-risk, validate technology, another way basically I think is if you can get an advisory group for early stage company, maybe it's not a formal board,
mm-hmm.
but if you can use the resume of your advisory group to kind of put in your business plan, basically to show that, you know, a few other people have vetted your idea or story and they've got recognition to the outside capital world, that's a
right.
big positive.
Right. Okay. Fantastic. So given all of this, are there any best practices that come to mind that you'd like to pass on to the MTC members and other companies that out there that are looking to raise capital?
You know, I think they're basic. I think one is you got to have a clear vision. You need very, very clearly explain the business model, the value proposition. You need to explain, let's say, to an investor how they're going to get their money back. And I think you also need to really identify well kind of the market you're going after. And the opportunity, because any investment group, you know, they're going to be looking at 10 or 20 or 30 alternatives. So it has to be clear, again, you know, why you're going after this market, and it also has to be clear how they're going to make their money back.
Right. I'm going to ask a very specific question. I run into a lot of mentors and past executives that are now helping other CEOs prepare for the capital markets, and everybody seems to have their own vision of what a pitch deck needs to look like when you're out there raising capital. My experience, having been out there raising quite a bit of capital, is that pitch deck is different with every investor you're talking with. What's your view? Is there one best way to structure a pitch deck, or is it more about the pitch itself, how flexible you are in that environment?
Right. I don't think there's any one answer to that. I think the issue is you need to know your customer, so you know what the investors are looking for. And then I think the other big piece of this that, you know, they're very much investing in the management team. So I think putting some of that track record of the management team up front for in certain circumstances is very, very important.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. So this is going to be a little bit off track. I know that the podcast is aimed at the capital markets, but I want to talk a little bit about advanced manufacturing in Maryland, because I truly believe that you're setting a tremendous standard for advanced biomanufacturing in this state. I also see a trend now in the life sciences space where Maryland is, to some extent, becoming a hub for advanced biomanufacturing. We've got your development, your growth, what you're doing, Emergent BioSolutions and their facilities in Baltimore, the announcement recently that Kite Pharma is going to be opening a manufacturing facility in Urbana. I was at the ribbon cutting for the Precigen manufacturing facility just yesterday. It seems like what's happening, at least the way I view it, the gene and cell therapy market is maturing, and now more and more products are going into the clinic. So we're seeing a greater need for manufacturing. And Maryland seems to be popping up as a very interesting hub for that advanced biomanufacturing. What are your thoughts around that?
I agree. I mean, I completely agree. I think the state, there's a ton of technical resources here. There's veterans that have come out of Human Genome Sciences, maybe MedImmune, AstraZeneca. So I think the talent is here as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, a few of the companies you had mentioned, what Paragon has done today, we're going to be getting, you know, a lot of employees, executives, say, trained on this. And it's early stage, right? Because most of the manufacturing to date has been for clinical work. You know, we're just starting with, you know, one of the leading companies in the world, commercial activity. So I think there's lots of jobs to come. And what I like about the manufacturing jobs, these are long-term jobs, right? Because, you know, the contracts that we're entering to now are multi-year. So I think they're going to be, again, long-term jobs for the state. And we'll be getting, you know, a lot of people trained, you know, in the whole new exciting area of gene therapy.
That's fantastic. And again, I think Paragon is setting the standard. I think what you guys have done, the facility that you just opened, is amazing. So is there anything else that you'd like to share that we haven't covered today?
You know, for entrepreneurs, again, I think it's important just to be scrappy, right? And there, you know, you have to go after multiple ways to validate technology, multiple ways to raise capital, and, you know, kind of and put up the good fight, basically. I think that would be the key advice.
All right, great. So we've talked about the fact that Paragon is setting the standard of excellence in the state for advanced biomanufacturing. The cell and gene and immunotherapy industries are growing, they're developing. I believe Maryland's becoming the number one hub for advanced biomanufacturing, as I've said. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here, right? You just announced the acquisition by Catalent. You know, this is at least your second really good exit that you've facilitated, so you're on a great track. What's next for Paragon at this point?
You know, right now we're all very excited about kind of the partnership with Catalent moving forward. The deal should close in probably in about 4 to 6 weeks, mm-hmm. basically. I think we aligned very well with them. I think they very much want to accelerate what we're doing. We are also looking at some adjacent service offerings beyond kind of the gene therapy space that we're looking at. So I think, you know, I think what it means to the state is substantially more jobs, faster growth. So I think it's you know, a lot of good things to come.
That's fantastic. So, Pete, I want to thank you for joining me today. I want to thank you for being on the board of the Tech Council, part of the executive committee. You've been a tremendous supporter and a very active board member. It's greatly appreciated. Any last-minute comments that you'd like to make?
No, and I appreciate the time this morning and appreciate everything you're doing, Marty, for the Tech Council.
Great. Thank you. So this is Marty Rosendale. You've been listening to Capital M, an MTC podcast focused on the capital markets in the Mid-Atlantic. For more information, you can look up our website at mdtechcouncil.com and join the conversation. Thank you very much.